Hello, internet friends. It's Scott McNulty, the host of Random Track. Before we jump into the show, I just wanted to remind you that March 2017 is the incomparable membership pledge drive. That's right, this is the time of the year when we remind you about how you can support the Incomparable Network and this podcast, and that's by becoming a member of the Incomparable. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge to support this podcast directly. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll then be asked to pick the shows in the network you'd like to support. If you just check the box for Random Trek, your entire contribution will come to me after a few fees are taken out. Now, I do encourage you to support the other fine podcasts on this network, so don't feel shy about clicking the buttons for the other podcasts. As a thank you for supporting us, members receive extras, including exclusive bonus audio, a live bootleg feed of The Incomparable, and members-only Slack group. And I'm in that Slack group, so if you want to talk to me about Star Trek, that's a great way to do it. Since this is a pledge season, this month many of the shows on the network will be posting bonus episodes just for members. In fact, this very podcast, Random Trek, has a special members-only episode where we talk about the animated series episode Yesteryear. And my guest? Everybody's favorite, Joe Rosensteel. So if you're a member, you get to listen to that. There are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 per month, and annual equivalents are available as well. If you're already a member, it's easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return. So if you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. Thanks, and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight, or this afternoon, depending on what coast you're on, is Kelly Gaumont. Kelly, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm excited to have you on. Tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a longtime Mac nerd, I guess. Like that wasn't obvious from people who know me. primarily, I guess the thing I kind of want to make sure gets the most attention right now is that I'm a volunteer for an organization called App Camp for Girls.
Tell us more about, I know a bit about App Camp for Girls, and I think it's great, yeah. But people listening, this may be the first time you're hearing about it, so
yeah.
Give the elevator pitch.
All right, App Camp for Girls is awesome, and here's why you should know about it. What we do is we spend a week and we teach girls going into 8th and 9th grade how to code, essentially. They build an app over the course of the week. And then at every camp in every location, this year we're in 4 locations, and including Chicago, which is new this year. And what we do is we collect all of the apps. At the end of the week, the girls have a completely functional app, and they pitch that app to a panel of investors with slides and the whole thing. And then we collect all of those apps at the end of the summer, and we release them as one app in the App Store. So if you go to iTunes right now, you can find App Camp for Girls apps. There are 2 of them. And you can find them for 99 cents. The money goes to developing more App Camp for Girls. This year, we're in Portland, Seattle, Phoenix, and Chicago. And at the end of the summer, girls have an app in the App Store.
And which is awesome.
And the whole program is women. We have women investors as the panel that they pitch the apps to, who ask questions about their apps when they're done. And they get the opportunity to do everything from all of the artwork in the app, and they build quizzes. And so every question, all of the possible responses to the question, the results at the end of the quiz, they have to decide all of that, develop all the artwork, create an icon for the app, all of it. And they do all of that in a week. And we've had some real success with people. One girl who was one of the campers our first year has joined the computer club at her high school and gone on to build a cybersecurity conference that takes place here in Portland this summer.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah. So we're trying to even it out a little bit, you know, and make a dent in our own way. Gene McDonald, who was a previous Random Trek
yes
guest, is the founder of App Camp for Girls. And so that's how I got involved with it. I've been friends with Gene for a long time, and it's super a lot of fun. And we've got more news and information on the horizon. So stay tuned to appcamp4girls.org. Mm-hmm. And you can find out more if you want us to do App Camp where you live. Fill out the form and let us know that's where we should be.
And I will make sure to have a link in the show notes for people who are listening who look at show notes. They can click on that and find out more about this very worthy cause that's happening. I think it's great for a number of reasons, right? Because I think, women are underrepresented in STEM and all that good stuff. So getting girls when they're young and giving them the confidence and showing them that they can build stuff themselves is very cool. But also, in this day and age, just knowing how to code and make an app is invaluable experience. Yeah. So I met with my accountant 2 days ago, and he said, do you build apps? And I said, I have no idea how to do it. And he was very sad.
Oh.
And I was like, I am a different kind of IT person. I don't do that. and then you could see the glimmer in his eyes died. I was like, I have no idea how to help you. But anyway, that's my little story. I have not gone to an app camp for girls, so clearly
that's too bad.
I don't know how to do anything.
The rest of the time, I will say, though, you can find me on other podcasts. Like earlier today, I did the Daily Observations podcast over at macobserver.com, and I write there occasionally as well. Mm-hmm. And you can hear me pop up all over The Incomparable now. I was on the most recent episode where we discussed The Good Place, and Don Melton and I are about to start our Westworld rewatch. We did the original first season run through live kind of as they aired, and we're going to do a rewatch so that basically we can kill time until 2018 when the show comes back.
Would you, Kelly, consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I am a Star Trek fan. I do like Star Trek. I have enjoyed Star Trek. I've watched a whole lot of Star Trek. I want to make sure like I get that kind of out on the table. But yeah, like one of those, if you have to pick one, like people are Beatles people or Stones people and things like that. Like I'm Star Wars people.
I accept all fandoms. That's what we say here on Random Trek. All fandoms are valid. So what about Star Wars appeals to you more than Star Trek?
Honestly, it's just a question of timing. I was very young and my parents took me to the drive-in and I saw the first Star Wars movie, and I was young enough and impressionable enough that Princess Leia sort of became my hero because she did all the running and all the shooting that the boys were doing.
Well, that's a very good reason to become a Star Wars person. and I do enjoy Princess Leia. So hooray for Princess Leia. But we're not here to talk about Princess Leia. She does not appear in the episode that we watched. But before we get to it, so you are a Star Trek fan. You've seen Star Trek. You've been exposed to a lot of Star Trek.
Yes.
If you could pick a series that you like the most out of all of the plethora of Star Trek that we have, what would you pick?
For series, I would probably, it's kind of weird. Like I have a lot of opinions about most of them, to be honest. So here's the thing, is that I took a class in college called The Social Relevance of Star Trek.
Ah.
And it was about the original series.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that the guy, it was one of those like student-led classes. And one of the things that the guy teaching the class did was he did a ton of research into like current events and things when episodes of the original series originally aired. And so when you watch Star Trek, when you watch the original series in the context of this is what was going on in America at that moment in time, or this is what had been happening in America kind of on the back burner, for months and months or years. And then this episode came out, it makes it almost like watching a news broadcast from that particular point in time. Mm-hmm. And at that point, like, it's very clear. So I have like a completely different appreciation of the original series because now I've watched a bunch of it, in a different way because of this class I took. And like the first one that was live and on TV, in my lifetime was Next Generation. So watching that was very exciting. And I really liked that. And I really liked Janeway. like as a mm-hmm. captain. I really enjoyed her. Deep Space Nine was cool in its own way. It sort of felt like Trek adjacent almost.
There's no ship.
It felt very much like it was in the Star Trek universe, but wasn't really Star Trek, I guess. I don't know. And so there's a lot of stuff about that that I thought was really cool. And so like almost all of them, I really enjoyed. And then when Enterprise came out, I tried to watch Enterprise and I watched the first few and it was like uneven and frustrating. And I mm-hmm. don't know what it was about it that just like I would be aggravated at the end of the episode. So I watched like three or four or something when it first came on. And then I just bailed on it because I really wanted to like it. I'm like, hey, it's that guy from Quantum Leap. And now he's on the Enterprise and he has a dog and da da da. And like, I wanted all the prequel stuff, you know, to be great for a change. Mm-hmm. And
and it wasn't.
It really wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of disappointed because I think I wanted it to be better and I wanted it to be, you know, one of those, like one of the things that I love about Doctor Who is the stories that take place in the margins. You know, he goes to Pompeii the day before the volcano, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I love those stories where you sort of find, you know, like, you know how it ends, but you get to find out all this other interesting stuff that's sort of going on in the margins at the same time. And so I was excited to hear, to like actually see an episode about some of the stuff we'd heard referenced in all these other episodes of Star Trek that we'd seen before. And I didn't feel like I was getting that. And I sort of felt like they were trying to blaze their own trail. And I'm like, you can do that, but still give people Star Trek, you know? And I kind of got frustrated and quit. So when you said, hey, this is the episode that we're going to watch.
I was yes.
kind of like, I think I said, I thought you liked me.
We are talking about an Enterprise season 2 episode 6 Marauders. Ooh. As I was explaining it, so I'll do a quick like 2-sentence summary of this episode because it is all A plots and there's not a lot of it even there, and then we can just kind of bounce around and talk about some stuff that happens. So our friendly Enterprise crew, they're running low on fuel. They land on this planet that is full of deuterium miners. They try to get some deuterium. The miners say, we don't have any. Archer says, we scanned your tanks. We know you have a lot. Please give us some and we'll give you some batteries. And they say, we want more batteries. And Archer's like, I can't give you any more batteries, but I can help you fix your pumps. And they're like, as long as you leave in 2 days, that's cool. We don't know why. And then in 2 days, or actually a day.
Do what you can do in 2 days and then you're out.
That's right. Yeah. Get out. Then we find out, tough Klingons arrive and they come here every year, I guess in the middle of deuterium season. Who knew there was a deuterium season, but there is.
Yeah.
And they take all the deuterium and leave, and everybody's sad. But one of the pumps was broken, yada yada. They don't have the Klingons deuterium. The Klingons aren't happy, but for whatever reason, they give them 4 more days. And so they come back. And the reason, of course, is because the plot demands it. And yes, the Enterprise crew, Captain Archer's like, we have to help these people. Everybody else is like, okay. So they help this scrappy band of colonists defend themselves. I really thought that they weren't
against El Wapo. Oh, wait. No, that's a different story.
Against 7 Klingons. And long story short, they win, I guess. We'll never come back to this planet. So it seems
because the one
unclear.
Guy told them, don't ever come back.
Right.
So they're totally going to listen to him.
The guy who was like the weak, sniveling leader in the beginning has become the tough, iron-steeled leader at the end. And he says, you Klingons, get off my planet. And they're like, okay.
He stood up to all those mean old grasshoppers. Oh, wait. That's a different movie.
He did. And then they give the Enterprise crew 1,000 times more deuterium than they agreed to.
Than the deal, yeah.
Yes. And then for some reason, the Enterprise crew, our crewmates, get into the shuttlecraft, fly away, leaving the deuterium on the planet. I don't know. Maybe they're going to beam it up later. They don't show us that part.
I just assumed they beamed it up. Yeah. The thing that was funny to me about all of this, aside from like continuing to remember where I'd seen this plot before,
Wait a second. And, this seems familiar.
And scene and scene and scene. One of the things that I really liked about it, even though they never said her name, was how T'Pol was kind of a casual, like, complete badass.
Yes.
But at the same time, like, aside from those few moments, I felt like she was really trying to out Vulcan everyone else who's ever played a Vulcan. So that was kind of weird.
I've had this conversation because I feel like you know, Leonard Nimoy, Spock, the archetype Vulcan, and every Vulcan that's been played since is kind of trying to be Spock. And so you've got, they're really only two main character Vulcans, Tuvok and T'Pol.
I felt like Tuvok kind of did his own thing a little bit. Like, I felt like he was a distinct personality, very mm-hmm. Vulcan, but still, like, not Spock. Like, later on. Like, you know, like, at first, yeah, it was rough, you know, because everybody has to sort of live up to Leonard Nimoy. But I felt like, I almost felt like she was sort of actively... And the thing about it is that I think for me, and I, of course, this is probably because he's, you know, half human, but for me, it seemed like Spock had a personality, even though he was Vulcan, and like emotion and stuff isn't supposed to be part of any of that. So I still felt, I think that that's where Leonard Nimoy really shines, is that in his performance, he, you know, Spock has a personality, is a distinct, you know, person on his own, and yet, you know, is still very Vulcan and not human. And so for me, that was, I think that's the part that people maybe have a hard time with. I did also notice, like, I don't want to harsh on her, because like I said, it was really awesome to watch her, like, wail on a Klingon, and that was pretty awesome.
Yes, but, she's like a Vulcan ninja.
Yeah, but she also had, like, her away outfit is a lot clingier than everyone else's away outfit. Like, could they not find her a pair of cargo pants? I mean, come on.
Yeah, she has very tight pants on and a very flowy blouse deal at the end.
Yeah,
there.
It's like it's all made of white spandex. And yeah.
Yeah, I had a problem with all of their away outfits as well. I don't understand why. So they have, I feel like there are a lot of things not to like about Enterprise. But one of the things I really like about Enterprise is kind of the art direction and the way it looks. Mm-hmm. Their jumpsuits seem like they make sense, right? They're kind of mm-hmm. military jumpsuits. I don't understand why they change, I guess, before they get into the shuttlecraft, into like khakis and a beige shirt.
Yeah, it's like a zip.
It seems
sort
weird.
Of a zip with like a mock collar, you know, like, yeah.
I didn't understand that, but
I didn't get it, but like you were talking about the art direction, one of the reasons I noticed their outfits is because they didn't just beam down in a uniform the way mm-hmm. lots of the Star Trek shows do. So I sort of liked that it kind of looked like an evolution of like what I'm wearing.
Yes, they had their activewear
like,
on.
They're into the future.
Their desert activewear.
Yeah, Yeah, it's the Captain Archer collection for weekends, you know. Now available at JCPenney's. And mm-hmm. I liked, it was one of the things that I sort of liked about it. Like, yes, it was weird that, because I remember, like, I don't know that I ever saw anybody in a uniform except when he talked back to the ship for like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I never got a chance to see him in uniform. But I did think it was interesting, like, right there at the beginning when we sort of find out, you know, the moment we see the ship's doctor and he's like, let me pawn off a weird pet on you. And she's like, yeah, no.
No, thank you.
We do sort of find out that there's that something is up because, mm-hmm. you know, she's trying to get all these different specific medical supplies in a variety of way, you know, for a variety of injuries. And he's kind of like, these are kind of serious medical supplies that you need, you know. And she sort of had this like evasive conversation with him about mm-hmm. how, you know,
she's like, yeah, it's very dangerous.
Stuff happens on a planet, you know, it's like
plasma burns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was I thought that was a good scene. Well, A, I like Dr. Phlox, but B, I think it was a good scene to set up because we know at that point, we're not sure what's going on with these colonists.
Yeah.
But we know something is up.
Something's up. We just don't know what. And that was, that I thought that made it very clear that I was right to think something was up.
Yes, something's a little squirrely with these colonists. At first, you just think, well, that guy's a jerk. The leader guy is just a jerk. But,
yeah, I'm like, he's just being a toolbox. He's mad because they don't like people from other places or whatever, you know, and trying to remember that, like, Enterprise, it's still very new for Earth to be sending people to other planets. So maybe it's new in other places as well to get visitors from other planets. So maybe they just didn't like them because they weren't locals. And maybe, it could be that simple, you know?
That's true. Another thing I thought was weird is that, you know, they are on this exploration mission, and they beam down to this planet. They meet this race of aliens. It is a colony. It's not their home world. But we've never seen these aliens before. This is another typical Star Trek alien that has something strange on their forehead. Although this alien...
with varying degrees of believability.
Well, yes. But they also, their things on their foreheads also have in two parts... hair grows out of it. So that's kind of how you can tell these guys are different than everybody else.
Yeah, but we don't know who they are. We don't know what their actual planet is. Like, we never found out anything about them.
And I feel like if you're explorers, you do need your fuel for your ship, but you also kind of want to, you know, hey, tell us a bit about your culture.
Yeah, hey, we found you, and you have what we need, and we would like to, you know, we're happy to trade you. But on top of the fuel that we need for our ship, we'd also like some information. Like, if you're a colony and this isn't where you live, then where do you live? You know, are you from the other side of this planet where it's all green and covered in ocean? Or
that would have been a good question. Although they do ask at some point about home planet. Like, why don't you call back to your home planet for help? And they're like, it's too far away. And then nobody ever asked anything else about it.
But what planet is that? You know, like, yeah, like, it was very... it makes me feel better to know that you also have these unanswered questions, because I was like, watching this, I was sort of like, I didn't find out any of these things. Like I said, I had to go look up to Paul's name. Who are these people? Like, I know that they're aliens. You can tell by their foreheads, you know, but what kind and where are they from? And like, you keep telling me that you explore and, you know, you're going to share the wisdom of your home world with me. Teach a man to fish, Archer. But
oh man, that scene.
Yeah.
So cliche. And I was really hoping that the guy would say, you know, Archer has this kind of heartfelt, you know, we want to, you know, teach you how to defend yourself. My planet has this saying, fish, you know, teach a man how to fish and he can feed himself forever. I really wanted the alien guy to say, what's a fish?
I know. I was like, I'm like, how does he know what that even means? Like, clearly this is not a place where people are fishing.
Yeah, not a lot of fishing going on this desert planet, it seems.
Right. And I'm like, and when he said that, I'm like, you know, where I come from, that's not how that goes, because I'm from Eastern Oregon, where people really do go fishing. And it says, you know, if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. If you teach a man to fish, he'll sit in a boat and drink beer all weekend. That's how that really goes.
Also good, though. It's a valid way to deal with threatening not Klingons.
Hate. Not judging. But yes. So I was like, oh, here, you know, oh, like I felt very, you know, Dances with Wolves kind of about it. Like, yes. You know, here comes like somebody smarter and better to come save you from yourselves or whatever. And, like, I at the end of this episode, which is from the second season, I felt sort of justified giving up on the first season, because when I was done watching this, I felt exactly the same. I'm like, you gave me an hour of television, but you didn't really tell me anything I wanted to know.
Now, I will say, Enterprise fans will say that the fourth season is when Enterprise gets really good. The problem with that is, of course,
you have to get to the fourth. There are three seasons of Enterprise?
Exactly. Oh, take that, Enterprise fans.
it's the same way Lost always promised that season 7 was going to be the zombie season, and I was always really excited to find that out. You know, whenever anybody asked them a question they didn't want to answer, they would say, we'll tell you in season 7, because they knew they were only making 6.
Ah, I see. No, well, season 4 is, I feel like, when the writers decided, hey, we're probably not going to get renewed, because I think what was happening is that, you know, I'm assuming some network exec said, we want a Star Trek show, but we don't want it to be too Star Trek-y, because only nerds will watch it.
Right.
And so you get Enterprise, which is kind of Star Trek light. And then by the fourth season, they knew they weren't going to get renewed. So they're like, well, let's just go all in on the Star Trek. And that's actually when you get a lot of good Enterprise episodes, because they are kind of picking up plots from other Star Trek shows, and they're making, you know, and that's what you want from a prequel. I understand you don't want to make it all about fan service and, you know, going into the esoteric minutiae of Star Trek that only super nerds care about.
Yeah, like, I don't need, you know, half an episode debating the semantics of swearing at people in Klingon. Like, no. First of all, I know people who will just have that conversation for me if that's really what I want to know. But, you know, that's not what it's about. And you can still, I mean, I think part of the problem with this show in general was just timing. Like, I think they started this show still at a point before comic book movies made hundreds of millions of dollars in a weekend. Yes. Mm-hmm. And everybody sort of realized it was okay to let your geek flag fly. And so, because this was on like Fox or UPN or like...
whatever UPN turned into, I think it was on. I don't even remember.
Yeah, it wasn't a network. It was like the outpost of a network, you know. Right. I think so, if I recall correctly. So I feel like they sort of, like you said, you know, like nerdy, but, you know, like we know Star Trek is nerdy, but we don't want to make Star Trek for nerds.
Right.
And like, and I don't understand how anybody thought you could do it that way.
Yeah.
Primarily because there are like anybody that you ask, you can sit down and watch them. And anybody who has found the right episode of Star Trek to watch, whether it's The Inner Light or, you know, they really like the new movie, the new, you know, Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto Trek movies or things like that. Like, I feel like maybe the part of what this suffered from was timing. Like, if they had waited to start another couple of years, maybe they would have seen, like, there is a market for a new Star Trek show that is Star Trek-y, that is full on space nerd Star Trek-y. Because this is before The Martian was a huge book and then a bigger movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you, like, I read the book. I loved the book. But the book is listening to him sit around and do math for, like, pages. You know, and figure out the solution to a problem. You know, and granted, there are stakes, and I get all that. But, like, a lot of what's in the book isn't necessarily inherently interesting unless you're somebody like me who is fascinated by problem solving. And so I feel like maybe this suffered from that a little bit. Like, they didn't get where they really needed to. They didn't get the opportunity because you weren't supposed to do things for nerds yet when this show came out. And if they had waited a little while, I think maybe we would have gotten more interesting episodes of Enterprise, you know, before we get to the point where they're like, yeah, it turns out, you know, they're going to cancel us anyway and we don't care. So let's have some fun.
Right. And this also, I feel like Enterprise tried to do the kind of the arc, multi-episode arc thing. They had a couple of, you know, temporal Cold War and all kinds of stuff like that. They weren't very interesting. But I think they should have. This is also before, maybe right around the time when people were realizing, hey, people have attention spans and will watch kind of a serialized show over several episodes. So we don't have to make every episode self-contained.
Right.
And Enterprise is kind of in this awkward in-between stage where I feel like, you know, Deep Space Nine in its later seasons especially went all in on that. But then when Enterprise came out, they were like, well, I don't know. Let's hedge our bets here.
Yeah. And I, you know, and there is a balance. Like, there are shows like, you know, there are shows like Doctor Who where you can watch one episode or two episodes, you know, depending on, like, sometimes they're two-parters, so you watch both of them as, like, one long episode, where there may be other stuff happening that you don't necessarily pick up on if you haven't watched the entire series, but it doesn't mean that you have no idea what's happening in the episode you watched.
Right.
And you can see it and you can enjoy it, you know, on its face. And maybe there's some detail or some shading or, like, a brief conversation or a brief, like, reference to something else that happened, you know, that you don't quite pick up on because you didn't see the other 11 from that season or whatever. Right. So I think there's some of that too. Like, there's a balance to be struck.
Yes, especially since this each season of Enterprise is 26 episodes long. So
yeah,
that's a long season. You can't do, like, Westworld is what, 10 episodes?
Ten or 11.
Something, a shorter period. So they, obviously, you can't just watch a random episode of Westworld and know what the heck is going on.
No, you'll have no idea.
But, so you need to strike a happy medium between having that deep, rich storytelling that you get by having basically a 10-hour movie.
Yeah.
Plus having some standalone episodes so that will give people an entree into the story.
Mm.
Which I understand. Enterprise, though, it's just, I think you hit the nail on the head there with it just was a weird time on TV, mm-hmm. and it suffered for it.
So I would like to ask you a question, a Star Trek question.
Oh, I hopefully have the answer.
Well, you do, because it's your opinion of a thing.
Oh, good.
So what did you think of Into Darkness?
Well, that is a loaded question for Star Trek fans, I will tell you, because there is a heated divide on, you know, not only Star Trek Into Darkness, but the whole J.J. Abrams spin on Star Trek.
Oh, the Enterprise shouldn't be an Apple store and all of that. I know.
Right, exactly. Lens flare, yada, yada. Yeah. I like Into Darkness. Feel like I liked it better when it was Wrath of Khan.
See, that was my hang-up with this whole movie, and the reason I wanted to ask you about that is because earlier you said you liked it's a vast universe and you get to spend more time with characters and you get, like, character mm-hmm. development, all those things, and I'm like, but Into Darkness is just Wrath of Khan 2, and I don't, like, that's the third time in all of the wide, vast universe you have led me to believe that Star Trek is and can be. We're going to go back to Khan, Noonien, and Singh for the third time?
Yes, it is.
The third time.
I will say Star Trek 2 is one of my favorite movies, period. Not just
Star Trek 2 is a great movie, period.
Exactly.
Like, Star Trek regardless Into Darkness, of how invested you are in Kirk and Spock and all of that, like, it's fun.
Right. That's what a movie where you can watch it never having seen any Star Trek, and it's still an entertaining movie. You get a lot more out of it, and certainly the end scene with Spock dying, spoiler alerts, if you haven't seen Star Trek 2, but if you're watching, if you're listening to this podcast,
if you're listening to us blather about Enterprise, I'm pretty sure you've seen Star Trek 2.
Yes. And if at this point you haven't, stop the podcast. Go watch Star Trek 2. Don't watch the Marauders.
Don't watch this episode. You're better off spending that hour, cashing in that hour on The Wrath of Khan, I promise.
Yes. But yeah, and I just love that movie. Top five of my favorite movies ever. Star Trek Into Darkness probably is not in my top five Star Trek movies. But I liked it. I mean,
now,
I have nothing against
it. I understand if you're J.J. Abrams and they give you Star Trek, that what you want to do is
you
make
play with
Khan
the cool toys
again.
Yes.
But if you're J.J. Abrams, why would you go slumming? I feel like that's cheating. I really do. And I'm not trying to, like, make Trek people mad at me. I'm really not. Like, this is just my assessment. I really like Star Trek. And I really gave the new ones a chance. I thought Beyond was a lot of fun.
Yes. Beyond was a lot of fun, and I think that's what especially I love the start of Beyond, where it feels like a Star Trek episode, a TOS episode, where, you know, Captain Kirk is insulting these aliens accidentally, and, you know, and I really like the 5-year mission, that kind of monotonous feeling. It kind of falls apart at the end, I think, but
it does,
it's fun
for me as well, but I felt like it was probably the Trekkiest of the three new ones.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Like, overall.
I like Star Trek, the first one, mm-hmm. as well, just because, you know, it was interesting to see the reboot, and I think that they cast these movies so well.
So well.
And you know, Zachary Quinto is, I feel like he's somehow cloned Leonard Nimoy. I don't know how that's happened. And Chris Pine, I'm amazed that Chris Pine... Kirk is so Kirkian, and yet he's not doing a William Shatner impersonation.
Right. Like, and I think that's the thing that I really like about the third movie is that I feel like I feel like all those characters are who they are. Like, there's no doubt that's Kirk. There's no doubt that's Spock. There's no doubt that's Bones. There's no doubt that's Scotty. Like, there's no doubt that's Uhura. Like, you know who everybody is. You know what their deal is. But it's still very much their own take on it, even though, like, I can totally see where that becomes Shatner, that becomes Nimoy. Like, I can totally draw that line, but you can, but it's still, you know, very much their own timeline. But I think that's what it is about the third one, is that everybody sort of settled in, and so it was the, I think it was the Trekkiest feel of all three of them. And I really enjoyed watching it. I had a good time watching it. I liked it. I feel like I enjoyed the second one until they made it obvious,
right,
that Smaug was Khan.
or Sherlock, depending on your favorites.
I hope I'm not giving anything away there.
Well,
that for me was frustrating, because then I'm like,
I've already seen this movie.
I watched this movie. Like, you get all the
better.
Star Trek universe to play in, which is big. Like I said, it's big, and they give you this whole universe, and you're going back. Like, why couldn't you have done this with a new character? And then I'm like, now I just feel like remotely, like, bad by proxy for Benedict Cumberbatch. Like, they give him a Star Trek movie, and I remember hearing that he was cast in a Star Trek movie. I'm like, okay, look, he's cast in a Star Trek movie. He's a main character in a Lord of the Rings movie. Like, what Comic-Con pass does he get? Like, they had to make a new one for
That's
him
true.
And for he, Martin he needs Freeman.
He needs to get a Star Wars part, and he'll be all set.
Yeah, I'm like, they had to, like, make a new level of Comic-Con pass for these guys. And I'm like... Like, I felt offended on his behalf. I'm like, you finally get to be in Star Trek, and you have to play, like, the one character everybody knows from Star Trek that's not in Starfleet?
Yeah. Like, and the worst part, I mean, not the worst part, right? But the beginning, you know, when all of the rumors were leaking that he's Khan, they were like, no, he's absolutely not Khan. We wouldn't do that. And of course, he is Khan.
And that's exactly what it was. And yes. That's why I was like, it'd be fun if he was a bad guy. Maybe that's what they're saying, is like, he's as bad as Khan, or he's the new Khan, you know, like it's this new defining villain that we get, you know, because, like, most people probably don't remember the bad guys in the other Star Trek movies except for Khan, because he's Khan. I mean,
that
what are you going to do? And so I was like, well, he's the new Khan. He's like the new big baddie that people are going to remember from Star Trek movies. No. He's just the new Khan.
He's just, like, Khan 2.0.
They weren't kidding. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I was disappointed in that. And I was, like, offended on his behalf. And I'm like, I wouldn't have taken that part. Because as much as I wanted to be in Star Trek, and I mean, I do. It would be awesome. But I would be offended to be like, and then I would be, like, offended for Ricardo Montalban. I'd be like... Like, why are you trying to wipe him off the map? You know,
that's
like,
true.
And that outfit of rich Corinthian leather. Like, why would you? Come on.
You can't compete with that.
Exactly.
You can't make it better.
There's no improving on that. There's just not. And I loved him. I think Benedict Cumberbatch is great. I love this. I love all the stuff that he does. But I was just sort of frustrated for him, like, in this respect. I'm like, this isn't fair.
Yes.
This isn't fair to anybody. It's not fair to him to do it. It's not fair to Ricardo Montalban, who has passed away, so he doesn't care.
He doesn't care.
But, it's not fair to either one of them. It's not fair to me to make me watch Benedict Cumberbatch play somebody that I already know.
That's true.
So,
most importantly, it's not fair to us, the viewers.
Yeah. And that's why I was curious about what you thought of that, you know, and getting more character development and spending more time with different characters and stuff, because I'm like, I feel like I've spent enough time with Khan.
Although that Star Trek Into Darkness did have Peter Weller, I enjoy RoboCop. Having him as an evil admiral was interesting. I felt like
fun.
they could have just made him the main bad guy and no need for Khan. But
yeah, I didn't need a B roll. I didn't need the B plot of oh, by the way, yeah.
No, because that's an interesting right there. He is. He is kind of this gray area, and Starfleet generally doesn't have gray area. They're always right. We're good.
He's a bad guy, but for good reasons.
Exactly. So that's an interesting.
Fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But let's talk. We're speaking about bad guys. Let's quickly talk about the Klingons in this episode. Because they are the bad guys.
They're bad guys. You can tell because they're Klingons.
That's right. They beam down. They knock some stuff over. They are incredibly stupid. I don't understand. Because the way they do this is like, hey, we've got this basically this oil field that we are harvesting. So if we move our village 150 feet to the left... the Klingons will not realize this, and we can lure them into the oil field and ignite it, and that'll be our grand plan, which is not a bad plan.
Except that if you're going to beam somebody down, you have to beam them down to a specific place, right? So
that is exactly it.
Does the engineer person, like, either they beamed them to exactly the same spot and went WTF, which I don't think is what happened. And then, like, so the engineer in the control room, you know, whoever whoever the Klingon is that stands
the
there and does that.
Chief O'Brien.
Yeah, I'm like, Klingon O'Brien, like, looked out the window and guesstimated? Like, what?
Yeah, that's the whole problem with this episode. I mean, there are a lot of problems, but the main kind of plot, you know, super Star Trek nerd problem is it doesn't make any sense because you need the coordinates to beam down to.
Right.
So, and they show the Klingons in the beginning beaming down to the town square. Okay, that's mm-hmm. cool. Then they show when the Klingons that the village has been moved 150 feet. They show the Klingons beaming down to the exact same spot, which doesn't make any sense.
In the new village, yeah.
They should be 150 feet over, and they should be confused. But, you know, it's not... I would have bought that, you know, Klingons just didn't care, and they're like, stupid humans, they're moving their buildings around, whatever.
Right, and they did say, like, those are all modular buildings because they have to move around, and so I can see where maybe the engineer... But I can see where maybe the engineer would have done it and not said anything, but I feel like we should have seen that happened, because otherwise you end up being me, who is not a person to pay attention to stuff like that, and I'm like, why didn't they beam into the middle of nowhere?
Kelly, what did you think of this episode overall?
I think I had a lot more fun recording talking about it with you than I did watching it.
I know I had a lot more fun talking about it with you than I did watching it. Because this episode is not good. I'm sorry.
It wasn't. I wanted it to be fun, and I thought, like, it's season two. So I sat down to watch it because I thought, maybe season two is when things picked up. I didn't realize that there actually was a point where it did. But I'm like, you know, a lot of first seasons are uneven. First season of Next Generation is not fun to watch. First season of a lot of things, you know, before everybody settles into what they're doing, you mm-hmm. know, can be rough until everybody kind of figures it out. So I thought, maybe it's just that the first season wasn't so bad, and that's why I didn't, you know, and so when I gave up, like, maybe I should have just come back to the second season and given it a chance. So here's the second season. Maybe this won't be so bad. Boy, was I wrong.
It's not good. I was hopeful. I like Klingons. But this episode, I don't like.
No.
That's what I say. Skip it. Unless you already watched it so you can listen to this podcast, in which case, I'm sorry.
And if you didn't, I hope we did a good enough job of letting you know what it was about so that you don't feel like you need to go back and watch it.
Because you can skip this one.
I would feel bad if you had to. Like, I think us talking about it was a lot more engaging than the episode itself.
I think that's right. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me and talking about this bad episode of Star Trek.
Thanks for having me on the show. I hope that maybe you will invite me back when we have a better episode to discuss.